I'm not going to share with you any great pilpul or chidush Torah. I want to share with you mi'um for deliver, maybe the things that are going through my head this week, especially because last week I was very close to another churban, the churban of Yiddishkeit in Europe 60 years ago. I was there to go to Poland last week with 60 rabbanim from Eshet Torah from around the world, led by the Rosh Hashiva Rav Nach Weinberg. And the reason why I went there is because what we deal with on a daily basis is another churban and another battlefront, and that's the battlefront of 50, 60, 70%, I don't know, of Hashem's children who are just not connected with him. And the reason why we went there is because this time of the year is a time of the year where we try to shake ourselves out of mitzvah sanoshim, the mother of the hergel of our lives, and try to get real with what the Rabboni Shalom is saying to us at this time of Ben Amitzorim. And at Shabbat Shudas last week in Krakow, somebody asked the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Weinberg, what year do you feel we're in? Where's Klal Yisrael holding at the moment? And he said 1940. And I for one thought, you know, I thought what I thought. And you open the newspapers today, and Nish Posh, where we're holding. So I'm just sharing thoughts on that. And I think especially for, you know, for us, for people who, you know, we're working and you carry on, and you know there's a yearly cycle and there's a weekly cycle and a cycle of life, and Ben Amitzorim comes around, Shavuos HaMetzores, Tisha B'Av, and every year we have a Ben Amitzorim, we have a Shavuos HaMetzores, we have a Tisha B'Av, and not too often when it comes around do we feel, you know, die, it's enough, we don't want another Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av shouldn't be part of our calendar, it should be as a Yom Tov, but not as a churban that we have today. So the Gemara says, "Kol dar shalom nivnasa ba beis hamikdash kilu nechara b'yomov." Any generation in which the beis hamikdash is not rebuilt, it's as if it's been destroyed in their days. And the Rosh Hashiva asks an obvious question. The obvious question is, what do you mean it's been destroyed? We didn't do anything. We didn't destroy the beis hamikdash. Why is it as if it's been destroyed in our time? And the answer is also very simple. The answer is the natural state of affairs of Klal Yisrael. We are Memlechet Kanim V'Goy Kodosh. We're all B'nai Melachim. We're all supposed to have a tour of what a Yid is, of what a Jew is. We're supposed to have a Beis Hamikdash with it. We're supposed to have Karbonos, Kanim, Levim, Bavadosom, etc., etc. If we don't have that, it's because we are befall destroying it. And we very often feel that, you know, we're distanced from the distance from Yerushalayim, the distance from what's going on, but we as Klal Yisrael are befall destroying, we're destroying what should be, because naturally we have a Beis HaMikdash. It's Muchon Ve'Omer, it should be there. Naturally, things are naturally there, and if they're not there, it's because we are doing something to destroy it. Last week I had a very palpable example of what is naturally there, and it just reminded me again in such a powerful way that every Jew is naturally there where they should be. All of Klal Yisrael, it's there, it's mamish omed u'muchon, but we don't do the little things that we need to do to make it happen. And I'll just share with you, because it was one of the most powerful experiences of my life. We were 60 rabbonim going through Majdanek concentration camp, and after about 10 minutes we were about a third of the way through walking through this concentration camp. And somebody was talking, one of the rabbonim was talking, and out of the corner of my eye I spotted a backpacker with a blonde hair, ponytail, cap on the back of his head, with a rucksack on his back. And I went over to him, that is my training, I said, "Hello, what's your name?" His name was Oren, and he was from Israel, and he was he took 3 months out of university in Israel to do a study into the wars of Europe. Well, he wasn't in Poland to see the Jewish side. He was he was studying the walls, and he thought he would go to my Dalek as well. So, you know, I've been in the business quite a long time. I thought, you know, poor guy, 60 rabbonim from Eshet Torah here, the guy's got no chance. Anyway, we were going through, and he joined us, and at the end, we were sitting at the memorial at the end to all that is left of the thousands of neshamas that went to Shemayim over there. There's a pile of earth and dust, and we were sitting over there, and two of the rabbonim spoke, and one of them is a son of survivors. He spoke incredibly movingly about his father was a survivor. He actually spoke on Torah Way with Yaakov Salomon, and he spoke incredibly movingly. And at the end, I was just saying something to sort of sum things up, and we were about to move, and behind me suddenly there was a piercing tzaakah gadola that I've never ever heard in my life, never heard anything like this, and an audible grown up sobbing, and this guy Owen was on the floor with his backpack still on, with his head on the floor and his head in his hand, and he was just crying out. And I mean, there are a lot of emotions that we all have, but one of the things is everybody, every Yiddish in the Shul is so close to the surface. It's there. That's all that needs to happen. He spent 5-10 minutes in a Makom Kodesh, you know, and he heard a few things, and he was there. And time and time again, we have this in our lives time and time again. And what we do in the frum schools and the non-frum schools and the universities, time and time again, the pain that you have is, if only somebody had touched this person earlier, frum and not frum, we're all, you know, as frum people, we're in our hellgel, but what sort of, you know, jolts us out of it. And that's really what Ben Amasorim is about. It's the thing, whenever I come to this time of the year, the thing that jumps out at me is the when I try to go back to the Shoresh. What was the first Tisha B'Av? What's the root of the Chorban? And the root of the Chorban is the Chet HaMeraglim. And there's one thing that always stands out for me in the Chet HaMeraglim. And we couldn't say it, the Chazal didn't say it, but it says by Yashuv and Yisuras Aretz that the Meraglim came back. And the next verse says by Yelchu Vayavo, that they went and they came back again. And the obvious question is why? Yeah, they've already come back. Why does it say they went and they came back again? So Rashi says, Makish Hadichosom Biosom. Ma Hadichosom Beitzarah Biosom Beitzarah. And I think the Torah to me on the Pasuk in Devarim, when it says, when Moshe Rabbeinu is recounting the Torah, and he says that you came to me and you asked Semaragim, V'yach Perulon Etaretz, and they will tour out the land for us. So the word doesn't say Losur Etaretz, it says V'yach Perulon. V'yach Perulon Lachpor means to mudrake, to look for the bad in Eretz Yisrael. It seems to be that the Makar of the Chet HaMeraglim was and continues to be having a preset agenda, deciding what you want to see, and that's what you want to take out of what you're going to see. And it would seem to be that if we're still in Agolus, which is Tisha B'Av, starts at Tisha B'Av, then that must be one of the things that we need to be metaken in order to break this cycle. The words of the Gemara just, you know, to ring out Mel Tisha B'Av Ha'isal Ma'akadosh Baruch Hu Atem B'chista B'chia Shor Chinam Lachin Ani Kaveh Lachin B'chia L'Zeros. You cried for nothing, and therefore I'm going to give you something to cry about. So, you know, we know as that sounds very you know, vengeful, or you know, I'm going to give you something to cry, but why does Rabbeinu Shem do that to us? So the answer is, and this is what I felt, you know, last week in Poland. We didn't go to visit sites and to see things. We went to be real with the Chorban, not just to sit on the floor and say kiddush again, and not just, but to be real with what is the matzav of Klal Yisrael. Rabbeinu Shem, Abba Rabba Altano, he wants to give us everything. He wants us to give the whole world meaning. He wants us to the world to be the place that he put us in, and wants us to be metaken, and wants us to bring the whole world to Yediyas Hashem, to Yichud Hashem, etc., etc. And if we spend our lives messing around with chinom dika things, with perpetuating things that are just not real, not roi for Klal Yisrael, then lachin ani kaveh lachem b'chiyah l'doros. So I want you to cry for real things. Don't just cry when you stub your toe, when you lose a bit of money, when you scratch your car, when you don't get the hotel you want for your summer holidays, you've got to go to a less good one. And but you know, get real. And mi'avas Hashem is solid, because Hashem loves us. That's why he sends us these things to wake us up and to get us to be real with these things. As an aside, something, just another limud that I'm carrying with me, again in Isha Torah we deal with lots of questions from lots of different people, and one of the ways to give somebody an answer which isn't threatening to them, when you look at somebody in the eyes and say, well, you are doing something wrong, you know, this is what you should be doing, nobody wants to listen to Chacha like that. So one of the techniques is a straw man. Use a straw man. This doesn't, not only for Kirov, it's for anything else. You talk about something else, you know, somebody else, those people are not really behaving properly, they should do this and this and this and this, and how maybe the other, and the person will get a message in himself. So I decided, since we've been doing a lot of these trips also for Kirov purposes to Poland, I it was obvious that the question why is going to come up often. So instead of me standing up and saying, giving a big shot and big vote on Tzadi Barala, who am I to give those answers? They're often too painful, and you don't know who you're talking to, somebody going through personal tragedy themselves. So instead I decided over the last few months to talk to survivors and ask them the question. And when people ask me the questions, I refer to somebody who's been through terrible suffering themselves, and this is what they say. And another time the answers are phenomenal. The bitachon you get from listening to people with numbers on their arms and saying that in Auschwitz we knew Me'is Hashem Hoyz Hazos, we when it was Yom Tov we sang and we danced, Mahudu Lashem Kitov, we just Kinif Lasi Benenu, it was hidden, we didn't understand. And one of the people that I spoke to was a Rav Menachem Mendel Rubin, the Mujai Rebbe, who lives in Flatbush. The reason why I spoke to him is his wife has written a book. She was a niece of your Teichelbaum, Zichron Livracha, the Satmar Rav. And I read the book and found chased them down. And I came both of them got married, I think, in about 1943, at the age of 18, 19. And 1944, the whole family was taken to Auschwitz, and there were very, very few survivors. So I said to him, I asked him the question, and he said to me something very interesting, but it's just so pertinent. Day in, day out, we come across these things, and when you hear this from somebody like that, and you put it into the context of Klal Yisrael today, it's just a very, very, very powerful thing, and something also maybe a tikkun at this time. He said to me, I am telling you, as I sit here today, and it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday afternoon, and Mr. Nigel Collison's filling on. He said to me, as I did it today, I made that there wasn't an era or ayor b'Yisrael in Hungary or in Poland, which is the era that I came from, where there wasn't machlokas, where there wasn't serious machlokas. And it was the week before Parshas Korach, and he took out a commission, he showed me Rashi in Parshas Korach. Says with Dosam Aviram, Nashon V'Tapom, I don't remember the Pasuk, the earth opened up and swallowed up the men, the women, and the children. And the obvious question is, what have the children done wrong? Why in this tragedy, why are the children killed as well? And Rashi over there says that the Beis Din Shom, you see, Kamakasha Machlokas, the Beis Din Shom Malo, Beis Din Shom Mato, are only gozer when Shemevi Shtei Saras or Ben Esra V'Malo. But the dimin ashamayim or machlokas afilu yonkei shodayim, even on children, lo aleinu, we should never know such things. But again and again, anybody sitting in this room, we all know about machlokas, and when you hear it so palpably from somebody over there, and you think about our souls, little machlokas and big machlokas, but the perpetuation of those things is mamish a chulvan. To come back to what I was saying about the meraglim, just to clarify this point a little bit more, it seems to be that the shurish of the Chet HaMeraglim was they had a preset agenda. They thought they knew what Klal Yisrael should be, what Eretz Yisrael was about, and that's all they looked for. And just when you think about it, when we think about it ourselves, I think so often in our interactions in life, this is what we do. We sum situations up in 2 minutes. you meet somebody, whatever it is, socially, in business, in any situation, they dress this way, they talk this way, this is their job, this is where they live, this is the car they drive, and any other information you get after that, you just plug into the stereotype of what you think that person is. We do that with people, we do it with hashkofas, we do it with issues in the community, we do it all the time. We make a decision, and in psychology they even have a fancy, you know, cognitive consistency. It's, you know, they recognize that it's painful to think, and when you need to reevaluate what you think about something, it causes cognitive dissonance, which I think just means pain, the pain of thinking, because human beings are not supposed to think. So we just let the things lie as they do. Now the truth is that, you know, we point fingers at goyim when they do that about Jews. You know, when they, you know, I don't like Jews, but some of my best friends are Jewish, or you know, or other, you know, stereotypes. But if one looks at oneself, I think, you know, we do it quite often ourselves, and that is the I think one of the shiroshim, one of the sources of the mistake of the Raglim, and that is something that is Bala Tikkun. And again, I see that so much in what I do, but we all do. I mean, I can bring lots and lots of examples, but you know, you take a kid who isn't behaving properly, who dresses a certain way. If you judge him for where he is, you're finished. You know, this kid's got a ponytail. What sort of a Yiddish boy has a ponytail? You know, but his neshama's there. Everything is so, you know, every individual is a celibate of kin, he's infinite. But when we judge them in 2 minutes, then kill the guy in a minute. So what? Now, just another little perspective on that. I think this point is so important that I think it's even brought out in the way we learn Torah. And maybe this is one of the things that we're doing when we're learning. You know, the famous Gemara in Erevin. That talks about Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, the Nechleku Gimel Shonim, that they have Machlokas for 3 years. And in the end, the Bastel comes out, Eilu Veilu Divrei Elokim Chaim, the Maskona, the Gemara is, Eilu Veilu Divrei Elokim Chaim. But the Halach is like Beis Hillel. Why is the Halach like Beis Hillel? Mipesh Nechim Va'aluvin Hayu, I think, you know, because they were pleasant and they were sort of laid back and accepting, benign in the way they acted. That's the loss of the Gemara. In other words, they would learn the perspective of Beis Shammai. Not only would they learn the perspective of Beis Shammai, but they would put Beis Shammai before them. Why would they do that? Because Karav also, you know, I know what my opinion is. I'm not going to be shaken up by somebody, you know, halabai, somebody else's opinion. But if I really want to try and get to the emet, then I need to have the hekef of everything else. So, and that's why the halacha is like Beis Hillel, because he listened and he put somebody else's opinion first. And it occurred to me, I think this is just an obvious truth. What do we do when we learn? You look at the Mishnah, you look at the piece of Gemara, you read it yourself, you think you might understand it, you read it aloud to your chavrusa tells you don't know what you're talking about, you try and work it out yourself, you get to Rashi tells you both of you don't know what you're talking about, you get to Tosafos, he says that, you know, what are you doing? You get the whole process of learning is getting out of oneself and trying to look for the MS and trying to get objectivity. Only the Rabbanu Shalom has, but the process of learning Torah is to get out of oneself and not to get stuck in this is the way I learned the Gemara, this is the way it is, and I we all know if you've got a chavrusa like that, it's a disaster. The whole process is to get out of yourself and to try and look for the MS. And I guess that is, you know, one of the lessons and one of the tikkunim that we need to do during this time is that number one is the things that we're doing is to get out of the hergel of what we're doing. Just a personal thought. Yesterday we began a training program for Madrichim on our programs in the summer. And there were two separate programs in Wales. One was for men, one was for women. And I looked at, you know, I looked at the girls going in, giving up a week of their time and then giving up 3 weeks of their time to reach out to Klal Yisrael. And tears welled up in my eyes. I tell you why. The question is it too late? Are we too late? You know, the Rebbeinu Shlomo has given us such matanos. In my generation, you know, what korban did I see? you know, we get on a plane, we go to Eretz Yisrael, we've got money in our pocket, we've got swearing in every bookstore, we you know, everything is available to us. And the Rebbeinu Shlomo is sending us such a powerful message now, and we just don't have time. We don't have time to keep going. You know, I'm sure in business this happens as well. You know, you call up somebody and he says, "Yeah, after the holidays." In Israel, they say "Achera Chagim." You know, it's gone. There's no time for that. Rebbeinu Shlomo is knocking on the door. You know, there's no time. You know, now is the time. Now in our lives as well, it's holiday time. Everything winds down. But we don't have time. And the first message of, you know, Rebbeinu Shlomo says, "Achena mikavel achem b'chiel adoros." That's real. Crying is just real. It's nothing to be afraid of about it. It's getting real. And I've been in situations again. This guy Oren, who, by the way, the end of the story is that he then met us again in Krakow, and then he went on a tour. I think there was another couple of places on the last day, and he agreed to come to Eshet Torah in Yerushalayim for a couple of weeks afterwards. Of course, that's the end of the story. Well, that's not the end of the story, that's the beginning of the story. But it's there for all of us. And this is a time to be to shake out of the hergel and to be real with those things. And if it comes by, no, unfortunately, what's going on? You know, read the newspaper. It's not thousands of miles away. It's here. It's and there are many battle fronts to that. And even though I'm talking as somebody involved in Kiruv, I don't need to tell you. Undoubtedly, this is in our schools and in our shuls, and it's the same thing. It's the same Torah and it's the same Hergel. It's a little bit different, but the MS is there. It's mummish there, and plugging into this cry of this neshama that just burst in front of me just reminded me that it's mummish there in front of us. The next thing that, you know, to avoid machlokas at this time, which directly leads to chulbon. That's what this. The survivor, this Mujai Rebbe, this mum, that is what the Chulban is about. We all have machlokas in our personal life, and we have it in the life of the Kehillah, and to leave it behind. And the third thing is to try and seek objectivity, to not be stuck in the way we view things, be it people jumping to conclusions very quickly, be it hashkofas, be it things that are going on in the community, but try and rise above that and look at the whole thing, look at the MSP. The Aleph, the Mem, the Sof, and to look at the whole thing and put it all together. And I'll just end with one thing of one of these survivors that I met, a wonderful tzaddikis by the name of Pearl Danish. She wrote a book called To Vanquish the Dragon. She also wrote a book about Sarashir, Shneer, and Beit Yaakov called Carry Me in Your Heart. She was in the Beit Yaakov in Krakow before the war. And I first met her in the week. A week, Lahavdala, was different maybe from the feeling in Israel this week, but it was a no less severe feeling. It was the week after Rabin was assassinated, and in that week I remember, you know, going to meetings with people with a couple on my head, and people would throw me out of their office. They said, "You really expect me to speak to you, you know, with a couple on your head after what you guys have done?" And I'm sure people remember at that time in Israel there was a feeling that we were on the edge of, we were on the precipice of a civil war between Frum, not Frum, you know, everybody, etc., which wasn't that far off actually this time last year when I was in Eretz Yisrael, with the withdrawal of parts of Eretz Yisrael, also the feeling of Jew against Jew, etc. So the first time I met Pearl Bingish, we were sitting in a coffee shop, the Gerlitz Bakery actually, in Yerushalayim, and after talking to her a little bit about, you know, her life in Krakow before the war, and Sarah Schneera, and her experiences, etc., I said to her, "How does a person like you feel? You know, you've been through so much, and Rebbeinu Shlomo's given us so much, and we're back in Eretz Yisrael, and we have Yerushalayim, and yeshivas, and seminaries, and, you know, phenomenal opportunities, and yet, look, we're sort of letting it slip between our fingers." She said to me the following, which I never forget. She said, "Naftuli, 55 years ago, 50 years ago at the time, on a Friday night in November 1943, I and my friends, there were four friends left with me from Bishakov and Krakow, we were placed in the gas chambers, we said Vidui, we said Shema Yisrael, and the doors had been locked. And just then there was a smashing on the door, and they opened up the doors, and Yimach Shimon, they'd made a mistake. Here I am, this is my granddaughter sitting next to me, she's 18 years old, she's learning in Bishakov and Yerushalayim. I promise you that the distance from where I was then and sitting here in Yerushalayim is far greater than wherever we are now to Mashiach coming, and Mashiach is coming, and don't give up, and we can do it, and together we will do it. So I don't want to end on that, you know, that heavy feeling, even though this time is a heavy time. The Rabbeinu Hashem is definitely sending us a message, Yiratzen, that we should be able to be real with the messages the English that sends us. We should be able to get out of our own hergel. We should be able to get rid of machlokus, which is perpetuated only b'chinam, and we should be able to nurture objectivity and openness in our chavusas, with our families, with all the people that we meet and volunteer and go.